So you see.
So like that, you see, right from the beginning, you see, preparation, mental, not necessarily, you see, an external means, but mainly your internal mental preparation is something important and useful. So usually I always, you see, speak with the Tibetans as well as my friend. I say, my strategy is hope for the best, preparing for the worst. This is, my usual, how to say, theory, right? Or philosophy. Like that. Right?
How does one obtain or develop the will to do what is good and virtuous? How does one develop the will to do what is good and virtuous?
I think I already mentioned these things also is a kind of the way to develop your inner strength. Now another method is to investigate what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of money? What is the meaning of body, physical? More investigate, more think. Then you will have a conviction that all these material, including your physical, including your life, and there is end. You see, there is a point which gives you sadness. It's money or wealth or fame, all these things, if you think if you think of, how to say, deeply, the ultimate, it's not permanent happiness, not permanent kasulta, happiness or thavcha.
That's not a permanent object of attainment.
So then you really, I'd say nirvana. Maybe there, but at the moment, you see, difficult to catch or to reach. Now the practical, and you see, I'd say, samarvidavita, something alive, something reality, is compassion. Warm heart. Serve other people, helping other, respect other, less selfish. So, with these practice, you gain some gain happiness. That happiness remains longer. See, if you investigate what is the real purpose of life, if you develop a good heart, say compassion, and love. With this motivation, hold your life, go according that way. Then your each day become useful and meaningful. Main method to develop your kasa.
Will.
Some boring subject in there.
Now I'm returning to the boring subjects.
You see, sometimes it's difficult. You see, since I'm explaining about Buddhism in its whole system or whole structure, so I have to explain these things. You see, some are not. Sorry.
This is the way we put on our upper robe when we're going to debate.
So you see, point. Actually not related in our daily life or even it's a daily practice, not necessarily know these things. So, but you see, in order to know the whole what is it, the whole background of Buddhist philosophy. You should know these things. Day before yesterday, we talked about the suffering nature and the first Four Noble Truths. Yesterday mainly the cause of suffering. Now today, the cessation of the suffering, suffering and the cause. Tangyala, anyone suffering, that suffering do you in this anesta castle of Yanis in check?
As was said the other day, because sufferings are produced occasionally, this indicates that they are caused. And as explained yesterday, one needs to identify that ignorance is the source of suffering.
I think we need some further explanation about the how to develop anger and attachment. You see, when we feel angry with someone or with, you see, certain object, not mainly, I think, with someone.
At the time of generating hatred, how does the object appear to your mind? Because you're getting angry because the person has harmed, is harmed, or will be harming you, what is this I that is being harmed?
Very moment, at that time, you see, we have a feeling that both subject, you see, I myself, as well as the object, the enemy, you see, both that moment feel a very solid, very independent enemy as well as independent I. This shall be I.
Due to this appearance of the enemy as truly established and oneself as truly established, and then one's agreeing with that appearance, conceiving of this true establishment, is due to this sort of conception that anger is generated.
Who am I?
If right at that time you use the reasoning as it's found in Madhyamaka and ask, who am I, this one that's being hurt, who is the enemy? Is the enemy the enemy's body, the enemy's mind, or what? When you analyze this way, solidly existent enemy seems to disappear, the solidly existent self seems to disappear, and due to that, the anger is as if broken apart. Is that true or not? Think about it yourself.
So that did you do?
Thus, even if we don't understand it well, we can get some sense that hatred, anger, depends upon this prior conception of the inherent existence of the harmer and the harmed.
Yeah. That is all in the
Now this emptiness of inherent existence is the mode of subsistence or mode of being of phenomena. This will be discussed a little later. Let us posit that desire, hatred, and so forth are consciousnesses that are produced upon the assistance of a mistaken consciousness that that misconceives things to be inherently existent.
Now you see these bad thoughts, if something you see inseparable from our main mind, then so long our main mind function, the angers and these and bad thoughts automatically will be there. But that is clearly not. Just the moment, it seems nobody feel angry. Although you see our main mind and functioning, working, my main mind is functioning to think and to speak, and your main mind is to listen and to concentrate. But yet, you see, anger at the moment, not there. So it shows secondary thought is like angers and attachment. These minds and the main mind can be separable. Now is another thing. In our mind, you see, there are two types, like anger and attachment, and other side, detachment, is a containment, and love, compassion. That yuchila meaning, tuchila chava nyamdo rungdwa.
With regard to one object at one time, one cannot simultaneously have hatred and desire. But in terms of former and later moments, yes.
You say today's enemy will become tomorrow's best friend. That is possible. Even international politics, you see, this is often come. You see, now you see, in private level also, you see, that is, always you see, come. So. But you see, in the same moment, it is impossible.
Therefore, those two consciousnesses have contradictory modes of apprehension. Once the modes of apprehension of these two consciousnesses are contradictory, when one of them increases in strength, the other one decreases.
Now, for example, you see, when you now I think very clear. When you enter military or soldier and going to participate in warfare, during that moment, because of the environment, you see, you often using, you see, hatred and killing action or killing talks. You see, how to kill, you see, how to sabotage, you see, all these sort of, you see, things. So naturally, when you immediate return, you can notice quality kajine talks in Madhyavidavish.
When that person returns, someone else can has immediate sense of what? Discomfort with respect to that person? Can notice that that person has a rougher sort of mind.
You see, easily agitated, this sort of thing. It's clear. Because, you see, angry chale ko khomarwa.
Because the person has gotten used to the class of anger.
The other side, you see, opposite side. 이제 된대기 피겠다. 아니야. 시다겠다. 가서를 뺀 딱바리 시다지. 아니야. 가서래. 그러나 저 콩도 영야기 시설을 매대봐. 즉 참생부터 할 수 첨부지 검대로 있나? 그냥 버저 콩도 쉽 중으로.
However, if that person gets used to what do you say? Is in a situation where there are no sources of anger, and the person gets used to love and so forth, this opposite side of anger begins to weaken. Thus, these two consciousnesses harm each other. Now, love and compassion have the support of valid cognition. They do not need the assistance of some mistaken consciousness like the conception of inherent existence. However, for most people who do not have an understanding of emptiness, when they generate compassion, most likely the misconception of persons and so forth as inherently existent probably does act to assist its generation. But in general, these types of virtuous consciousnesses do not need such misconception in their background. However, non-virtuous attitudes like hatred, jealousy, and so forth are only generated with the assistance of this misconception of inherent existence as their support and background. Thus, without the conception of inherent existence, there's no way that desire and hatred can operate. But the opposites of desire and hatred, those consciousnesses can operate even when there isn't any misconception of inherent existence. Therefore, as mentioned before, a consciousness conceiving of inherent existence is an erroneous consciousness. And the object that it's conceiving, its referent object, doesn't exist even conventionally. That consciousness which observing the same object as this ignorance, as this misconception observes, and which has a completely contradictory mode of apprehension to that misconception, is called a wisdom consciousness. The wisdom realizing emptiness. The non-inherent existence has a valid foundation. And it is something that when one investigates it, it becomes clearer and clearer. Whereas with regard to the true inherent existence, unless you stupidly force the matter, the more you look into it, the more it disappears. In addition to the fact that a consciousness misconceiving of inherent existence and a consciousness that realizes the emptiness of inherent existence in addition to the fact that these two consciousnesses harm each other, the wisdom realizing non-inherent existence has a valid foundation, therefore, therefore, through accustoming to the wisdom realizing non-inherent existence, the conception of its opposite can be lessened. Now, these consciousnesses realizing such selflessness as well as compassionate consciousnesses and so forth are all, what do you say, mental qualities. Because they are mental qualities, because they are mental qualities, they can be more stable. Because there are qualities that depend on the mind, and because the mind exists continually, their basis is more stable, more continuous. Because their basis is stable or continuous, and because once one is trained in them well, one doesn't need to rely on such effort to regenerate them, they can be the development of these consciousnesses can be limitless. For instance, if you're carrying a pack on your back, because your back, your body is not such a stable basis, it is only possible to carry a certain amount. You can't develop and develop and develop to a limitless extent. As it said, as Dharmakirti says, with regard to jumping, you can train about so much. You can't, you know, there's a certain point beyond which you cannot go. Or if you're boiling water, you can boil it about so much. It will be used up just from boiling. However, with regard to ordinary study, for instance, except for the fact that there's a limit to our lifetime, there isn't any sense that you couldn't fit this into your brain, say. No matter how much you study, even if you study, you know, 100,000 million billion words, you can still keep putting them in. This indicates that the basis of these, the consciousness, is more stable.
So the other thing that has me tension to mention,
I made a joke to someone who was asking about the brain. I said that if you needed a cell for each type of, for each moment, for each type of memory or consciousness, after a while you'd use up all of the cells and your head would have to get bigger and bigger.
So more educated person must have greater brain and
the more educated person have to have a bigger brain.
So
because these types of compassion, wisdom, and so forth depend, are qualities that depend on the mind, they can be developed to a limitless degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It is from this point of view that it is said that the conception of inherent existence can be extinguished, can be removed. When one removes the conception of inherent existence, one thereby also removes the afflictive emotions that are generated by that ignorance.
So you see, the motivation which creates the action, certain action, since motivation ceases, the action will cease. Now the motivation and action cease, the result will stop. So that is the reason. Third noble truth, cessation, tusleh.
That is the reason why there's the third noble truth, true cessations.
Yeah, yeah. Nirvana condition.
Then what is nirvana?
That delaya the nirvana yongyagi dubjit yongyagi shidi any kasore renshineri digitani shagware.
The basis through which it is possible to attain nirvana is called the Buddha nature or the naturally abiding lineage. And the individual systems of tenets have different interpretations of what this lineage or Buddha nature is. Many different Buddha natures are explained in terms of grossness and subtlety. In the lower schools, the hearer schools, they do not speak of a Buddha nature because they assert that there are three final vehicles, and due to this, they speak of the lineages of superiors. Because a hearer who has become an arhat or a foe destroyer, when that hearer dies, there is a severance of the continual mind and body. There is no further training, for instance, in the path of the bodhisattvas. Therefore, they say that there are three final vehicles. However, let's see, even though there are statements in the sutras of the great vehicle that there are three final vehicles, those statements are shown to require interpretation by way of indicating what Buddha was thinking about in his own mind, the purpose for his stating that there were three final vehicles, and reasonings damaging, not necessarily, damages to the literal reading of those scriptures. Now, what was the basis in Buddha's forth? What was the basis in Buddha's thought when he set forth the four lineages of superiors? This was indicating that temporarily there was a definiteness of lineage.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the four lineages of superiors, the first three are, what do you say, Buddha indicated that one should be satisfied with
food.
Mediocre food, clothing,
shelter.
Then,
that this room is not a ton of effort culture or Islam. Any? Because of porn, gumballs.
And then, in dependence on these three, of what should one make effort at? One should make at effort at getting rid of faulty states and seek to attain, helpful states. These are called the four lineages of superiors, causal lineages of superiors.
That's something that we should tell Lugi, Gunshi think is Sami Yishi. Sami Yishi is Savin, Tebet in the Sir Madevizula, Zanshinari, Sir Tebetola, Genjuji Sasha.
In the Chittimatra system, they speak of the. In the system of the Chittimatrans following scripture, they speak of, what would you say, the Buddha lineage as a seed of the non-contaminated exalted wisdom, which is with the mind basis of all, the alaya vijnana, which when it has not been activated by conditions such as hearing and thinking on the doctrine is called the naturally abiding lineage, but when it has been activated by conditions of hearing the doctrine and thinking on it and so forth, it is called the developmental lineage.
Can you that when she came in there, Nangi teach you two things. Nangi teach you two things. Then you have Sami Yishi Sabe, Ken the Tana. That was some good talk with you.
And in the system of the Chittimatrans, or
that religion
of the Chittimatrans following reasoning, they say that the Buddha nature is the seed of the non-contaminated exalted wisdom, which is with the six sources.
No, if you truly think it, then you have Sami Yishiji. Sabe, get the tenor.
It is a seed that is always with the mind, the in which, when met with conditions, is capable of generating the realizations of the three vehicles. This is called the naturally abiding lineage. Then in the Madhyamaka system, the Buddha nature. In the Madhyamaka system, the naturally abiding lineage is identified as the reality of the mind, even though the mind is accompanied by defilement. This reality of the mind being that which, when one meets with conditions, is capable of being transformed into the truth body of a Buddha.
And
that which, when one meets with the conditions for the full transformation of which it turns into the form bodies of a Buddha for the sake of taming trainees is called the developmental lineage.
That
The great vehicle of the Bodhisattvas, it is explained
that
in the Madhyamaka system, it is explained that there is only one final vehicle.
So what
is this nirvana that is attained in the independence upon the Buddha nature or the lineage? In general, with respect to nirvana, there is a natural nirvana, which is just the reality of phenomena, their emptiness themselves. It itself is completely pure.
And
it is into the sphere of this pure nature that the obstructions are extinguished. Therefore, it is called the natural nirvana.
Then
with respect to the low type of nirvana, there are two versions, the nirvana with remainder and the nirvana without remainder. The meaning of the nirvanas with and without remainder are in the first instance that one has actualized nirvana but still has a remainder of mental and physical aggregates which are impelled by contaminated actions and afflictions. Whereas the nirvana without remainder is a case of a person, well, is a case in which nirvana has been actualized, but there is no longer any remainder of a continuum of mental and physical aggregates that get their impetus from contaminated actions and afflictions. The reason why this is called a low form of nirvana is that one has extinguished from among the two types of obstructions only the first of those obstructions, the obstructions to liberation from cyclic existence. However, there is a final nirvana, a nirvana at the level of Buddhahood, which is called the non-abiding nirvana. It's called the non-abiding nirvana because one is not abiding either in the extreme of cyclic existence or in the extreme of a solitary peace. Rather, one has brought to perfection one's own development and has brought to perfection the capacity to bring about the welfare of others.
Mm.
in this case, one has not only completely overcome the obstructions to liberation from cyclic existence, but has also utterly overcome the obstructions to omniscience.
So that new betubadigi rank yun deji khansa dumya chembiare.
A person who has the obstructions to liberation in his or her own continuum, these obstructions bring about suffering for that person. And the obstructions to omniscience, since they prevent one from knowing objects of knowledge or prevent one from knowing the knowable, these cause one to be unable to teach the doctrine and so forth in accordance with the capacities, predispositions, interests, and so forth of other beings. Therefore, when one extinguishes or overcomes just the afflictive obstructions, one is liberated from cyclic existence. But when one has not only overcome the afflictive obstructions, but also overcome the obstructions to omniscience, one has attained the Buddhahood, what do you say, the omniscient consciousness of Buddhahood. These sorts of nirvana, where do they come among the Four Noble Truths? Where does such nirvana appear with respect to the two truths? Chandrakirti said that a nirvana is an ultimate truth. Since a nirvana is a true cessation, it is an entity of an ultimate truth. Through the power of the antidote, that is to say, the wisdom realizing selflessness, the absence of inherent existence, the afflictive obstructions extinguished in the sphere of reality. That sphere of reality itself is a true cessation. So that is what a nirvana or liberation is. Even though true cessations are all of the same general type, there are many different levels, beginning with the true cessation, which means the abandonment the abandonment of what is to be abandoned by the path of seeing on up through the path of meditation. Now, this discussion will come at the time of true paths, but in brief, there are the paths of accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and no more learning, and these five are posited respectively with respectively for hearers, solitary realizers, and bodhisattvas, making 15. At the time of the first two paths, the paths of accumulation and preparation, one doesn't actualize, one doesn't have a direct actualization of the truth of emptiness.